Wisconsin Eyes Campaign 2022 programming is sponsored by Wisconsin Counties Association, Quick Trip, Wisconsin Hospital Association, and Wisconsin Operating Engineers Local 139. To support programs like this, please consider a tax-deductible donation at wisi.org/donate or by texting WISI to 44321.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Even though Wisconsin's elections for governor and U.S. Senate are largely thought to be among the most consequential in the nation, voters will have fewer opportunities to see their candidates debate. It's part of a national trend of candidates weighing the risks and deciding to opt out of debates. Today, we talk with some seasoned debate moderators, Shannon Sims and Charles Benson of WTMJ, right here in their Milwaukee WTMJ studio.
Welcome to our newsroom.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And it's actually kind of quiet.
Well, we'll liven it up here as we talk about debates. Oh, sure. You both have moderated the GOP gubernatorial primary debate. I know you're prepping now for the October 13th U.S. Senate candidate debate. What does the format look like for that October 13th U.S. Senate candidate debate?
We think the format's going to look like a traditional debate. We try to come in with very simple rules. Each candidate will get a question on a equal number of topics and the same topics. And they'll each get a minute to respond to those questions. So we feel like it's a traditional debate, you know, sort of chance, here's a question, now give us an answer.
So do formats of debates matter to candidates? I know sometimes there's a town hall style, sometimes there are journalists moderating. What do candidates think about the formats?
I think candidates' camps think a lot because we've gone back and forth with the format and what they will allow and what they'd like us to tweak. But I think for us, what has been beneficial is that we've been able to just think of themes and topics and the format of just questions. Town halls can go a little awry sometimes because some of the candidates can take a longer time. Where here we have, here's a set time. You have 1 minute to respond, 30 seconds to rebut.
There's some negotiation that happens.
Yeah, but I'll say before I get to that, if you want to see a real debate, watch us prepare for the debate.
Oh, there's a backstory then.
There is. I mean, we debate. We talk about these issues, you know, and I know you want to get into the prep time on this too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is part of our prep time. We really have fascinating discussions, which means our prep
time. I love
the
word fascinating.
Well,
but you do negotiate with the candidates about certain details.
So yeah, but as I said, pretty basic format. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to ask questions. You're going to get a minute to respond. You're going to get 30 seconds for a rebuttal. So that was the format in the primary. We pretty much said, here's the format. Then they all said, okay, great, we'll see you there. And there's some rules about, you know, who will go first, toss the coin, you know, who's going to get the last comment. There's a lot of those details. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that goes into it. When we got into the general election, there was a bit more negotiating, I would say, around what the format would look like. They knew, in general, it was going to be questions to the candidates, chance for rebuttal. And I think what both camps wanted was that we changed
fair.
Was they wanted, pardon me?
That it was fair.
Well, it's always fair, I think, you know, but they wanted to make sure that they had an opening statement and a closing statement.
So that's what we'll see on October
13th. Right, so the first thing you'll see is a opening statement. And then they were looking for a chance to have a longer opportunity to do a rebuttal. So we gave them a one-time 60-second rebuttal, but we're going to keep rebuttals.
There's a lot at stake in these debates, and as we mentioned in the open, kind of this controversy about whether or not candidates want to participate. We're hearing that nationally, and past April, the Republican National Committee voted unanimously to remove themselves from the Presidential Commission on Debates. They said that format was biased. We're seeing something similar in Wisconsin in the 3rd Congressional District with the congressional candidate, Derek Van Orden, saying he doesn't want to participate in debates. He thinks a format that's been around for a really long time is biased. Why do you think we're seeing this new reluctance on the part of candidates in both in Wisconsin and nationally to do more debates?
I think it's the political climate we live in, and sort of this how people view the media. So, and I think right now we're at $55 million in mm-hmm. campaign ads in the governor's race, making
setting records,
the mm-hmm. most expensive in the country. And in just in September, we saw somewhere around $26 million just in this U.S. Senate race. So much of the campaigns have gone to the traditional media of getting their 30-second campaign ads out. Mm-hmm. So they feel like that's where they want to battle.
Well, they can control their message better in advertising and in social media than they can in a debate.
Very, very much true. But when you think about it, the first televised debate was just almost 2 weeks ago when you had Nixon and Kennedy. And when you think about it, here was a space and place where it was uninterrupted. You were on the spot to say how it is you would govern your ideas and philosophies uninterrupted until they were challenged by those who could fact check, right? So I still think that the debate format allows candidates the opportunity to share their platform, to also expand on their platform. But what it doesn't do, it doesn't allow you to shut down after the 30-second video, say, or commercial that you would give into traditional media by getting your message out. Because there is the possibility that your either opponent will challenge you or the debate, those moderating the debate.
Well, there used to be consequences when candidates would decline to participate in debates. It seems like there's less of that now.
It's, again, the environment they're in, we're in. So are they, you know, saying no to traditional? What I would say, we're traditional. You know, we're going to hold a traditional debate. We're going to have some pretty spirited conversations around policies. We know they're going to give their talking points, and they know we're going to challenge them on their talking points. There's some big issues here, and I'm sure we're going to get to those. You know, it's one thing to say, I will protect Social Security.
Mm-hmm. It's another thing to say, how?
Right? What does that mean? You know, when you say, I stand here, but did you say, I used to stand here?
Or explain why you stood there.
Exactly. So there's a lot here that I think a traditional debate helps a viewer and a voter to understand the difference, especially when they're getting pounded with these campaign ads.
So you're preparing right now for this mm-hmm. October 13th debate that you both will moderate between sitting U.S. Senator Ron Johnson mm-hmm. and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. How are you preparing?
Well, we have already just started. And for us, it's more about we know the issues. So now let's dig deeper in how they can explain how they will produce or sponsor policy on those issues. That's one thing. I think the other thing is that we're also looking at the ads. What are they saying? And being able to fact check those ads, because we know that those will be talking points in our debate.
What do we know about how the candidates prepare? I was reading a Republican strategist in Politico recently estimated a single hour-long debate requires 60 hours of the candidate's time and another 500 to 1,000 hours of staff time. What do you think that looks like on their end?
So I don't know. It is curious because, you know, they have a lot of what I would say downtime when they're traveling from different locations. But I have never sort of explored, you know, as we hear in the presidential debates. We knew Governor Scott Walker would help then Vice President Mike Pence. He would play the role of the other person in that vice presidential debate. And he helped him with strategy. So I'm sure they've got consultants. I'm sure they've got strategy. But they've also, you know, I don't know if they're studying up on the issues because they've been talking about
the issues. They should know those.
That's the part. But I'm sure there's a strategy that they put into it. How much time they spend,
it'll show.
It can show. But keep in mind, debating is a skill in
yes.
of itself.
Yes.
And I don't know if you ultimately can teach it in those final 30 to 60 days.
But I think what is important to see that over the few debates that we've moderated, I'm sure you could walk away, Charles, and say, they had a strategy, or that person really prepared for this debate. And I think that maybe it's a money thing, right? How much money do we want to contribute into how we will show up on television for an hour to discuss the issues with our opponents? And I mean, I can see it from over the years, who studied and who didn't.
The Marquette Law School poll has been asking voters regularly about what issues matter to them. And in the most recent poll released earlier this month, inflation remained the top concern, as it has been for most of the year, followed by crime. And then the poll asked for the first time about the importance of an accurate voter count, which means different things to different people. And that issue came in third, followed by schools, and then gun safety. Abortion came in sixth. We know you can't share with us the questions. You could share the question. But we know you can't share the questions that you'll be asking. But how do you determine which of all of these issues you think are the most important to voters? We'll start here.
Well, that's where
our debate comes in.
begins, because we do look at that, you know. We also know there's going to be a Senate debate before our debate, because there are two Senate mm-hmm. debates. So we will look at that to see, hey, was this topic really taken care of, or did it open the door to some more questions?
And don't you also think what we look at is, yes, these are the issues. Now, how do we go beyond the headline of the issue? We know that what camps believe on this issue and that issue. So the question doesn't circle around, well, are you for or against? Now it's more, tell us what that means. How do you plan to govern in that space in Washington?
So in some ways, that follow-up question is more important than the initial question.
I think we've seen that. Yeah, the follow-up question. That's not the one, because they knew if they were going to be asked about, you name the topic, mm-hmm. this was going to be their answer.
Sure.
If the answer didn't address the question, then you try to get them, but the question was this. We know you want to protect Social Security, but will you do it this way or that way? It really is, and I think voters want these questions, because for the next 6 years, one of these two candidates is going to be in the U.S. Senate. And there's going to be a lot of issues and a lot of different policy issues, and they want to know, would they specifically do this in what is likely to be a divided government? I don't think anybody's going to get a supermajority coming out of this U.S. Senate race. So mm-hmm. we're in divided government right now, and that matters to know where they're going to stand.
We talked a little bit about how things have become so much more partisan maybe than they used to be. And then this kind of the scrutiny on the media over the last several years. How do you ensure that you are fair, truly fair, when you're moderating a debate?
Well, I think it's the time frame that we're given each candidate to respond. And I think it's our due diligence to make sure that we understand and know the facts before we go into this debate. But fair, I mean, we're asking each candidate a question. Now, we've said these are themed questions. You might not get the exact same question. It may be specific to that candidate, but it's still in the same theme. It's still around the same issue. And I think that is fair.
In terms of that follow-up, how do you know how far to push, how much to push a candidate?
Our producer tells us we don't have enough time to go further.
It's usually on that. And I think that's, though, by this is where the prep comes in. Because if you hear something or they didn't say something, that's where we have to know both of their policy positions. Mm-hmm. We have to know deep within that they maybe have said this, and therefore, because you have said this, are you still holding to that? So that follow-up question can be pretty poignant, because it may reflect something that has been missed in the conversation.
Let's talk about this particular race. Last week in the National Review, a conservative publication, they said Wisconsin is probably the most important 2022 Senate race in the country, because it is probably the race on which the worst case scenario for conservatives hinges. Do you agree with that?
I don't know what that really means.
What they're saying is that if things go well for a Democrat, it has different messages for kind of the flavor of the country, what's happening across the country, or if a Republican wins, it's a different story nationally.
I think the seat is important. I definitely think the seat is important. Just by seeing who these candidates are aligning themselves with in Washington, it's very clear to me that Mandela Barnes has aligned himself with a number of top senators in Washington, right? So that if he were to win, he comes in already kind of having this group to usher him into whatever the policies and the procedures are for the Democrats. Ron Johnson is an incumbent. I mean, he's been there. He knows that. He knows that space. I just think that this seat is very important, not just because it's Wisconsin, but I do think that it will play a role in how everything shakes out in the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, it's the balance of the power of the mm-hmm. U.S. Senate, right? This is what they're talking about. But there's some other big states, Pennsylvania and Ohio and Georgia. And so when you look at all of these different races, I know Wisconsin will be the battleground state that it has always been. I mean, I still see this election being close, yeah. and close can be 1, 2, 3 points. I just looked at the numbers again today. Registration is around 3.5 million that are expected to want to vote. We'll see how many
those go to the polls.
All vote, because we're now, we're 5 weeks or 4 weeks away here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're coming down to the wire. Yes. And I do know a lot of people watching what's happening in Wisconsin, and a lot of national money is in Wisconsin to make sure one side or the other that they want a certain outcome.
Sure.
Speaking of people watching, we know presidential debates often have really high viewership. They rival the Super Bowl at times. Down ballot, midterm debates, maybe not so much. They typically have lower viewership. Who do you think will be watching this debate? What are the type of people that will be tuning in?
I think any and everyone will be watching this debate, but what I think will be instrumental is the different platforms, right? Now that we have so many screens, we have our phones, we have our tablets, we have TV, we have YouTube, replay. I think that a lot of people will take in this debate, whether it be live on Thursday the 13th, or whether it be in a replay on YouTube, whether it be on their phones, on our app, people are engaged in the process. It's very clear right now due to the issues that have risen to the top. So I think all people will be watching it. I think it's important for us to engage the millennials just as much as the traditional baby boomers who are known to watch debates.
Yeah, I mean, debate is traditionally going to be on TV, but does something go viral on Instagram, Twitter? This, you know, something else come out of this debate, because it lives out there for a long time. It's on a Thursday night, so it's going to have a pretty good 24-hour news cycle going into the weekend. So this is where debates really, it's not just who's watching at home, it's who's listening and following and what has caught their attention.
I just want to think about when we did the primary debate for this U.S. Senate race, right? One of the candidates popped, right? And she immediately made a commercial.
Yeah.
So then that drew more people to it. Then we had a discussion with the governors about, it was the governor's primary, where we were talking about paid family leave. Mm-hmm. Now that became a conversation on the national. And so a national media partner picked up that one soundbite, linked it to our debate, and there are more people now watching.
So social media has really even changed how people watch and engage.
Yes, most definitely.
The Marquette poll has also been asking people regularly about their opinions on these candidates. In the most recent poll, we saw a pretty significant shift with independent voters. And then there are still those voters out there that are saying basically they don't have enough information. So when voters were asked this September about whether a particular candidate shared their personal values, this is not a surprise, but the segment of people saying, I don't know, which was much higher for the non-incumbent candidates, like Tim Michaels in the governor's race, like Mandela Barnes in the U.S. Senate race. 11% said they didn't know about Tim Michaels' values, compared to 5% for Governor Evers. In the Senate race, 15% were unsure of Barnes' values, compared to 7% for Johnson. Do you really believe that a debate can help a voter make up their mind?
I do. You know, we hear this term independence, right? And in this state, you're wondering, who's the independent?
Who are they?
Right? Because we're not red and we're not blue, but we have people in solidly in both camps. So the one thing that changed dramatically in the U.S. Senate race was among the independents from August to September, and we saw a big shift. Another term I've heard, and NBC has been using this, is the persuadable voters. They are ones who are like looking at one or two issues and saying, you know what, those two issues matter to me. And they could be persuaded to change their vote. So
are we seeing a lot of persuading
voters? No, they're always still that smaller group. Mm-hmm. So I think just like if you're watching your candidate, you're probably going to walk away being reinforced by that. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, I still don't know, yeah, I'm hoping that we have given them something to think about.
Do you think there is a particular issue this time around that people are paying closer attention to that might be a vote-deciding issue, or is it not really about the issue?
I don't know. In Wisconsin, I really think it goes right down the lines. I think there is that issue, and then there's just that sense of, do I trust you to do what you say you're going to do in Washington?
And they can get a good sense for that in a debate?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I think that our debates will definitely give you more ammunition at the dinner table when you're having those debates with family members on who you plan to vote for, because you'll be able to see them in living color up close and personal. But yeah, I'm on the fence with whether it will be issues or just core value and reliability that puts either one of these on top.
Shannon, you brought up the history of debates, that famous debate between former President Nixon, before he was President Kennedy. And through in the history of debates, there are these gaffes, these sort of famous gaffes where people make mistakes that some say really do make a difference on whether or not they can win or lose elections. I think there's the famous one with former Texas Governor mm-hmm. Rick Perry, who couldn't remember the names of federal agencies.
Yes,
do you believe that a debate can win or lose an election for a candidate?
I think when they're mm-hmm. this close, a big mistake can cause a big change. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about having momentum. It's all about,
it's got to be a really big mistake, though, at this point in time.
It really does. And then is there time to correct it or time to, address the issue? One of the things that happens in all debates, and I've covered big debates, is that you go to the spin room, right? Mm-hmm. You go, what happens after the debate? And then you start hearing the spin on it. I really do try to encourage people. I said, look, watch the debate, then turn off the TV.
Okay.
And have a discussion, either among yourself. Because then if you start, just listening to everybody else spin, mm-hmm. then, are you getting your perception of what happened or somebody else's perception?
That's the voter. The one you're talking about.
Context is always important, but that's what we're going to try to give you, that context of here's where they stand on the issues and here's how they disagree on the issues. And I always think if you kind of at least take that in a little bit yourself, uh-huh. before you start getting all the spin, because there's going to be plenty of spin.
And I think that's important to say, the context. Context is so important. That's what you miss in those 30-second ads that you see for, forever and ever until the election day.
And more and more are coming.
Is context is everything. And we try, when we prepare for these debates, is to get them to speak on the issue from context.
So let's make sure people know where to watch these debates. There will be two U.S. Senate debates, as you mentioned, WTMJ Marquette University-sponsored debate on October 13th, and then the one sponsored by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association happens on October 7th. Meanwhile, those two candidates for governor, Governor Tony Evers and Tim Michaels, will only meet once to debate. It is the fewest number of general election debates between Wisconsin governor candidates since 1998. Any thoughts on why that might be?
One word, surprise. I'm surprised, mm-hmm. Because I really thought they would go with more than one. We're still optimistic. If you're not doing anything on October 20th, come see us at Marquette, Governor Evers and Tim Michaels.
Good pitch there. So do you have thoughts on why that might be, why they aren't interested in more debates? Usually in a close race, it might be something you would choose to do.
Sure. I don't know the why. It is disappointing that it's not, because I really do believe that this is a space and place where candidates are able to expound on the issue. And I also think that it shows how they show up in leadership, because again, debating is a skill, leadership is also a skill, and you're asking people to vote that you will lead them and or the state forward. That is our model, you know, in the state of Wisconsin. So it is disappointing that most of these candidates have said, no, I shy away. I wonder why, because it doesn't really allow for us to see them in a space where we can. Because once they get to Washington, once they get to Madison, the everyday person does not see how they govern.
Yeah, and I think especially in the governor's race, right? That's the one that's going to have such a direct impact on people's lives here. Not that the U.S. Senate doesn't, but you're remember, you're one of 100, right, in the U.S. Senate. You're going to be the CEO of the state. And really, a lot of direction comes out of the governor, how to navigate the legislature and how to navigate this state through a number of issues. And so that's what really surprised me, that they would not find another opportunity to get in front of the voters and say, here's where we stand, and this is what you'll get.
So what is your pitch to viewers, particularly the majority of people who we know have already made up their mind, why should they watch your debate on October 13th?
I believe because engaging in the process is important, not just going to the ballot, but also listening to hear what candidates have to say on the issues that matter most to you and maybe those that don't, so that you can get a broader perspective of how this person, again, I think it's so important to say, how they will lead and how they will govern, because they're responsible for federal dollars, they're responsible for influencing state dollars, and that affects you. So take time to sit with us for an hour with two candidates who are hoping to lead Wisconsin, and as you said, be kind of like that COO of the state in Congress for the state of Wisconsin.
Do you have any predictions on what will or won't happen in the debate on October 13th?
Never good at predicting. You know, when
what are you wearing?
We will try to be neutral. You know, we're not. Don't wear the red tie. Don't wear the blue tie. You know, so. But it's to me. It may sound a little corny, but it's about democracy, right? It's about letting people know about democracy. So when I moderated the Lincoln-Douglas debates, just kidding.
how old? No.
Right. This is how long I've been doing it. But this is what I feel. That was a great opportunity for people to see, talk about the issues. That's what we're trying to do. Talk about the issues.
Do you have any recommendations for how people should watch the debate? Do we put on our pajamas, get some popcorn, a glass of beer?
You're definitely going to want to get some popcorn. I definitely think you're going to get some. You want to get some popcorn. Hey, watch it however you feel comfortable. You know what I'm saying? If you feel comfortable with watching it on your cell phone while you're at the laundromat, do that. You know, if you feel comfortable with just being at home in front of the TV, do that. We just want you to watch and engage with us on how these candidates will respond to our questions.
And what will be interesting, we will have a live audience. So I think that brings energy to the room. You know, we're not going to turn this into a Bears-Packers game, but we do, you know, get that energy from the room because it adds an element that I think some of the other debates don't have.
All right. As we wrap up, give us the final details. How do we tune in? How do we participate on October 13th?
So October 13th is going to be a day when we wake up. We will hopefully have all the questions ready, still making some last-minute changes.
Oh, we make last-minute changes at 5:55.
But to go in there prepared and knowing that that voters will walk away with an opportunity to see the Republican Ron Johnson and the Democrat Mandela Barnes to see where they stand and where they want to lead for the next 6 years. And you can do that by watching us online at TMJ4 or on air at TMJ4, Channel 4. But we're also around the state. I don't know all the other stations, but this will be a statewide.
Evening of October 13th.
Yes, and you'll hear them live beyond the ads, beyond the voiceover.
No ads in our 1 hour.
You will hear these men one-on-one, explain their position, and also, interestingly, hopefully enough, engage with one another.
Well, good luck in your preparations, and thank you so much for the conversation today.
No problem.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.